Radio on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on www.cqut.ca on the World Wide Web. News, interviews, and music featuring the voices of prisoners, their allies, and supporters. Tune in to the Prison Radio Show on the fourth Friday of every month between 11 a.m. and noon, or on the second Thursday of every month between 5 and 6 p.m. To get involved in Prison Radio or finding help searching for past programs, email prison@cqut.ca.
Is to invest again with dignity. You consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had? Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
You were a number. You weren't a name. You want to be a human. I wasn't Jim Crow, and hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
Oh, the law. The law. When they hang my husband, is that just...
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show. My name's Noah.
And my name is Candace.
And we're your hosts for today's show. On the show today, we'll be talking with Sophia Elijah, the Executive Director of the Correctional Association of New York, about some good news coming out of New York concerning youth justice. We'll also be speaking to Ralph, who's the Legal Coordinator at Head and Hands, a youth organization here in Montreal, in Montreal's NDG neighborhood. Ralph will be talking to us about youth and incarceration, as well as Project X, which is a project that works on racial profiling and teaching youth strategies and supporting them. But first, we wanted to kick off the show with a song by Peter Collins, who many of you may remember is a longtime contributor to the Prison Radio Show, who's currently incarcerated in Ontario. Peter was recently told that his cancer is advancing fast and he doesn't have long to live. He is currently seeking a compassionate release from CSC. You can find out more about Peter at kersplubadeb.com/posts/compassionate-release-Peter-Collins.
I'm a prisoner, a man on the line, alone in this cell, doing nothing but time, nothing but time. The brick's getting thicker, the fence is so tall, and I'm getting sicker. And I stare at this wall, stare at this wall. I had some dreams, they're all gone now. That thing called redemption, well, they don't allow another endless morning. Another groundhog day, stuck in cement. It's how they make you pay, how they make us pay. Just a prisoner, a man on the line, alone in a cell, doing nothing but time, nothing but time. Once found a diamond in this violent place. She had kind eyes, had a smiling face, had a smiling face. That's all gone now, just like my dreams. I shouldn't have hoped. That's how it seems, that's how it seems. The days drag by, same as the nights. I ain't got nobody to hold me tight, to hold me tight. Troubled on the inside, stuck in this hole. 28 years in prison, a life-ending role, life-ending role. I'm a prisoner, a man on the line, alone in this cell. Doing nothing but time, nothing but time.
We're excited to welcome Sophia Elijah to the Prison Radio Show again. She is now live with us on the phone. Sophia, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Excellent. How are you doing?
Fine. Great to be on.
So maybe you could first introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about the Correctional Association.
Certainly. The Correctional Association is a not-for-profit independent organization that was founded 170 years ago for the purpose of monitoring the conditions in the prisons throughout New York State and advocating for change to improve those conditions. It started off as a volunteer organization and has grown and developed into a professional organization with a staff of about 24 people. We're based here in Harlem, but we travel all over the state visiting prisons. I became the executive director back in March of 2011. I'm a criminal defense lawyer by training, and I have practiced throughout New York State and in Massachusetts, and I also have taught law both in New York and in Massachusetts.
Right. The Prison Radio Show spoke with you and others from the Correctional Association a few years ago in the fall of 2013. At the time, we spoke about the Raise the Age campaign. Before we get into the details of that campaign, can you give us first a bit of background about the legal situation in New York State for youth in contact with the criminal justice system?
Yes, currently New York and North Carolina are the last two states in the country that automatically prosecute all 16 and 17-year-olds as adults. They not only prosecute 16 and 17-year-olds as adults, New York State also incarcerates 16 and 17-year-olds as adults, with adults, and that is highly problematic. In addition, 13, 14, and 15-year-olds who are charged with serious offenses can also be tried over in adult court. This is a situation that has been highly problematic and has caused very serious negative outcomes for the young people who are experiencing that system. The Raise the Age campaign is one focused on radically changing and overhauling the youth justice system in New York such that we would have much better outcomes for young people and improve public safety.
Recently in January, New York State Governor Cuomo said in an address, he said, "Our juvenile justice laws are outdated. Under New York State law, 16 and 17-year-olds can be tried and charged as adults." He said, "It's not right. It's not fair. We must raise the age." How did things come to this point? What happened so that the state governor said this in an address?
Well, a broad coalition of advocates from across the state have been working on this issue, the Correctional Association being one of those advocacy organizations. We met with numerous individuals and groups that work on the ground with young people. We met with policymakers, legislators, representatives from the executive. We did a number of public forums where we educated the public. We did a number of op-eds and letters to the editor, reaching out to media sources, trying to build awareness, because one of the first problems that we realized is most people in New York State were unaware that we were so far behind the times and unaware of the serious negative consequences that we were visiting upon our young people. So that groundswell of work resonated ultimately with the governor, and he decided to appoint a commission to study the issue and make recommendations to him as to how we could improve New York's youth justice system.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a bit more about the recommendations of the governor's commission on youth, public safety, and justice?
Yes. Well, there were many, 38 recommendations, in fact, and that's because the family court system and the adult system and how they intersect when it comes to young people is very complex. And we realized that you could not really just raise the age of criminal responsibility, say, to 18, and think that our work was done, because all of the other surrounding factors that impact young people, if they are prosecuted, needed to be addressed if we were going to ultimately create better outcomes for young people. So when the governor created the commission, he appointed myself and a lawyer named Jeremy Creeland to head that commission. The commission was comprised of a broad spectrum of people, advocates and law enforcement people, and we came up with a set of recommendations that was a balanced approach to overhauling New York's youth justice system. there were some compromises, needless to say, when you have a group that broad, but we came up with what we thought was the best set of recommendations for New York State. And we started with recommending that we raise the age of criminal responsibility to age 18. We also recommended that the bottom age be raised from 7 up to 12, and that only in the instance if a young person was charged with a homicide could that age be as low as 10. Otherwise, anybody under 12 would no longer be prosecuted in family court or adult court. We also recommended that no minors be incarcerated in adult jails or prisons. We called for the investment of the state in a robust set of services and support that would serve young people charged in family court, and for those few cases that would remain still in adult court, that those still that set of support services would also be available to them. We recommended diverting a large number of cases. PINS cases would no longer be eligible for placement. So the breadth of the recommendations, as I said, was broad. We looked at expanding youthful offender treatment and sealing cases and not making accusatory instruments available to the public before a decision was made as to whether or not youthful offender treatment, in fact, was going to be given to a young person. So as you can see from what I laid out, what we recommended was kind of a one-stop shop, full set of recommendations that should ensure positive outcomes for our young people and improve public safety.
Sophia, what would you say are the next steps? How can we see these recommendations actually affect the law? How can we see the laws change? And what would you say is the timeline for that?
Well, the next big step is that the governor, first of all, embraced all 38 recommendations, which we are very, very pleased about, and he incorporated them in a comprehensive budget bill. That budget is due to be voted on and passed no later than April the 1st. So between now and April 1st, all of our efforts have to be on convincing our elected officials in the Senate and the Assembly to adopt the budget bill such that this comprehensive set of recommendations will become law. So a lot of attention has to be placed on educating people because, as I said, it's a very complex system, and helping people to understand the system so that they can appreciate why this comprehensive set of recommendations is so important and that they should support it needs to be our full focus right now.
Sophia, so in New York State, Governor Cuomo's 2015 Opportunity Agenda Address, the governor talks about how Black and Hispanic youth make up 33% of 16 and 17-year-olds statewide. However, they make up 72% of all arrests and 77% of all felony arrests across the state. And in our last interview with Angelo, he talked about how most of the youth ending up in prisons are coming from certain neighborhoods that are hardest hit by incarceration more generally. And we're wondering if you can talk a little bit more about this, about the racialized aspects of incarceration of youth in New York.
Oh, this is, thank you. This is a reality not only in the youth justice system, but in the adult system. We have what we call in New York seven key neighborhoods or million-dollar blocks, it's euphemistically called, that account for the vast majority of the people who are incarcerated. And the communities most affected come from the Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens, and Manhattan. A large number, and there's a website for the Justice Atlas of Sentencing and Corrections, and it shows you the zip codes from which people come. About seven zip codes, key zip codes in Harlem are included, then South Jamaica in Queens, the South Bronx in the Bronx, and then in Brooklyn, you have Brownsville, Flatbush, and East New York as being key neighborhoods where a large number of the prison population in New York State come from. We also have a growing trend in Rochester and Buffalo and Syracuse as those cities' demographics shift, so you have more black and Latino people populating those cities. You find more black and Latino people from those same cities in the New York State prisons.
What do you suppose are the links between the 38 recommendations from the Correctional Association and these neighborhoods that are affected by incarceration?
One of the recommendations that we made is that the state adopt and expand on family support centers, some of which exist in a few upstate neighborhoods, and they've had quite a bit of success helping families and young people to address this panoply of services that they need so that they don't find their lives being impacted by the criminal justice system. There's a direct correlation, obviously, between poverty and involvement in the criminal justice system and policing practices in the criminal justice system. I think that a collateral consequence, if you may, of the recommendations that we came up with is to sensitize the entire criminal justice system as to why it needs to be more people-focused and more humane and provide people with the kinds of supports that they need so that they don't have their lives permanently impacted by a mistake that may have happened during their youthful years. We know that the way the human brain develops, the last part of the brain to develop is the frontal cortex, and that is the part of the brain that controls impulse control. It deals with impulse control. And this is why, and that part of the brain doesn't fully develop until the late 20s. And this is why most people who come in contact with the criminal justice system do so in their teenage years and early 20s. And so the recommendations from the commission appreciate that brain science and felt that it needed to be a major factor in how we shape the recommendations for the governor.
In our interview in fall 2013, we talked about the growing movement against mass incarceration in the United States. Would you say that the movement is still growing? Has the movement changed in the last year and a half?
I definitely think that the movement is still growing. And one of the things that I think has changed in the past year and a half is that the focus of the media on this issue has broadened. So we have enjoyed for some time more progressive radio, television, and print media support for a change in our criminal justice system. But mainstream media had not really joined that support. But we've seen a change and a shift in almost every major media outlet, and the dialogue has expanded to include a more human rights lens on the criminal justice system and a change in the discourse about the purpose of incarceration and a recognition that it ought to be focused more on rehabilitation and less on punishment. I like to say that we need to get people to understand that the experience of being sent to prison is the punishment, and that people are not sent to prison for punishment, but as punishment.
Great. Thanks, Sophia, for your time today. I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit more about the future of the Correctional Association. Let's say that the Raise the Age campaign is won and these laws change on April 1st. What's next?
Well, one of the things that's part of the recommendations is a planning period for exactly how the state can retool what it's been doing so that we make sure that we don't, quote-unquote, just dump young people into a system that's not prepared to provide them with the supports and services that are needed for their success. So the Correctional Association will need to monitor how the state is making those plans and implementing the various laws that we expect will be passed. We have to monitor what the experience is of the young people who now will no longer be in the adult system, but in the youth justice system. We have to monitor the outcomes. Are the recidivism rates dropping? Are the arrest rates dropping as we expect that they will? Are the diversions that we expect will happen actually happening? So we will be quite busy, and that's just on the youth justice side of our work. We will continue monitoring the conditions in the prisons, focusing on what's happening with women who are incarcerated, what are the various policies that affect people going into the system, and the policies that affect positive reentry when people exit the system. I don't imagine we're going to run out of work for a very long time.
You're probably right. Thanks so much for your time. Thanks for joining us here on Prison Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM. The time is currently 11:25. Sophia, do you have any final thoughts or comments you would like to share with our listeners today?
I would urge everybody to contact their elected officials and push them to vote to adopt the budget so that we can raise the age of criminal responsibility in New York State and improve the outcomes for young people and public safety.
Great, thank you.
If people have more questions, they can contact us at www.correctionalassociation.org. They can also call us at 212-254-5700. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Slap.
You're listening to Prison Radio on CKUT 90.3 FM. Albert Woodfox has been transferred awaiting a decision on whether or not he will be released on bail. You might remember from our last show that Albert is the last imprisoned member of the Angola 3. You can now write to him at Albert Woodfox, number 72148, West Feliciana Parish Detention Center, P.O. Box 2727, St. Francisville, Louisiana, postal code 70775. Also from our last show, anarchist prisoner Sean Swain has been transferred to another prison. He is no longer on hunger strike and is taking his blood pressure medication after being forced into isolation. He is now being held in Lucasville, Ohio. You can write to him at Sean Swain, 243-205, P.O. Box 45699, 1724 Street, Route 728, Lucasville, Ohio, postal code 45699. Up next, we have an interview with Ralph, who's the legal coordinator at Head and Hands, which is a youth organization in Montreal's NDG neighborhood. Hi, Ralph. Welcome to the show.
How you doing? How you doing, everybody? How you doing, Noah?
Great. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
Awesome.
Beautiful outside.
Yeah. Thanks so much for being on the show. Do you want to just introduce yourself and maybe talk a little bit about your role as legal coordinator at Head and Hands?
Yes. Again, like you mentioned, my name is Ralph. I'm the legal coordinator at Head and Hands in NDG. I've been coordinating the legal clinic. We have volunteer lawyers, 10 to 12 volunteer lawyers, ranging from different expertise of law, from immigration to tenants and landlords issues, family, criminal also, and then wills and youth protection also. These legal clinic is every Wednesday and Thursdays from 7 to 9:30 when people are interested. They have a legal issue, they call in, book an appointment, and they get a half an hour for free to sit down with the lawyer. Also, I coordinate the legal services, so working with youth, providing basic legal information, pamphlet resources, basically, I'm kind of the person who kind of the go-to guy, basically, to point them where they could go, basically. Because as a paralegal, I'm not licensed to practice as a lawyer, so I'm just there to provide legal information. So for a youth who has legal trouble, to solve it, basically exploring options.
So in your role as legal coordinator, what are some of the things you're seeing in terms of youth and their experiences with incarceration? What are people dealing with?
I see that some of the youth that comes in, most of them, when they do commit little infraction, and it's most of the time, I guess, before it actually they've been convicted, it's the fear, basically, of seeing that this crime is so minor, that they might end up being incarcerated. Most of them, it's like fear and not know exactly what would happen before being convicted, you know.
Hmm. And, did you have more to add?
No.
Okay. Can you maybe talk a little bit about what are the things that you see in terms of things youth are dealing with that might be specific to NDG or just the context of NDG?
We work with a lot of black youth, and many of them are, same ages as, like, Mike Brown, you know, when we had killed unarmed black youth who were killed by police. So we work with them in many different ways, including help them cope with the racial profiling. And then we support these youth directly with racial profiling in like four ways, basically, which comes together as Project X that we have at Head and Hands. And then these four things is basically active listening, safe space, provide a safe space to be heard, free legal information and consultation with volunteer lawyers, and providing workshops on racial profiling, and basically how to interact with police and conflict de-escalation, and talk about their legal rights, And also we distribute resources about the legal rights, like pamphlets, and also now there's a video online on the website that discusses about like identification and issues and interaction with police. Yeah.
So I think a lot of what you're mentioning there is part of what Project X does, but you mentioned Project X, which works specifically around supporting youth dealing with racial profiling, and I know that you have been involved or are one of the sort of creators of it. Can you tell us more about Project X?
Well, Project X saw the light in 2007 with some staff from J2K and staff from, well, Head in Hand staff, but people working at J2K was a drop-in center from youth to 13 to 17, and then also some street workers. So basically, Project X was it was a response to black youth being constantly harassed and stopped or questioned by police, could it be in any public spaces like metro, shopping malls, and parks. So this was to basically provide a safe space for these youth to share their stories in a safe environment so they can share what actually happened and be heard. So basically it's to tackle the issue of racial profiling by providing these black youth a space to be heard and providing workshops and then discuss about their rights. So basically Project X it's basically a safe space, exactly. I just said it, yeah, but yeah.
And what you mentioned workshops for youth dealing with racial profiling, what are those workshops like? What kind of resources or strategies are discussed?
Well, when I do these workshops, I basically we trying to first of all understand the legal system, the court system, and then after that we explore certain terminology, like certain words that you know sometimes are used often by the on the legal side. So understand these words, that if you hear these words, this is what it means. What does it mean, a conversation from a police or a detain or the word arrest? You know, all of these words. So we explore these words and we try to understand the definition and what it actually means and entails. And then we go through also a lot of role play. And these role plays is basically we have activities, actually a simulation of, a car with youth sitting in the car and people playing the role of police. And then they interact with each other. So we give them specific role. So they have certain things to say and not say. And then we let them act and, you know, play their role. And then we stop and we talk about the do's and don'ts. So basically do's and don'ts, what should have done in this situation, what happened there. Someone sitting on a passenger seat and the police asked for identification. Should you give the identification or not? So we discuss about all of these things. And it's an active participation. And you see the youth very embracing and having a lot of good time and learning these basic rights, because it's something that we can never control when you're actually in a real situation in life. But these definitely have helped the process of feeling more youth feeling more secure and more empowered to make a decision when it happens in the real life. So these workshops is basically to solidify a foundation to be able to interact with police when it happens.
Great. If people want to find out more about Project X, or if they want to access it as a resource, how do they do that?
Yeah, if they want, they could go to headandhands.ca. www.headenhance.ca or call and ask Ralph at 514-481-0277. And on the website is there's all the descriptions of all the workshops we offer, so people can go to the website and look, and then and get all the information. And if they have questions, you can always call at Head and Hands, and it'd be a pleasure for me to talk to them and then discuss more.
Great. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
No problem. Thanks to you.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. Have a good day.
You
bye.
Too. Bye. That was Ralph, who is the legal coordinator at Head and Hands, a youth organization in NDG. To find out more information, go to headandhands.ca. Up next, we have a piece by the Termite Collective. This piece was made to air on Kingston's prison radio show so that Peter Collins, who we talked about earlier, could hear it. Peter is currently seeking compassionate release.
Hi, everybody. Hi, Pete Collins. My name is Alexandra, and I'm a member of the Termite Collective in Montreal. The Termite Collective is a group of creative and concerned people who want to expose the ever-increasing repressive nature of prisons through all sorts of artistic means. Many of us in the Termite Collective have known your works for many years, and when we found out about your cancer diagnosis, we want to reach out and let you know how much we've been touched by your writings and your artwork over the years, how important it's been to us. And so to celebrate, we decided to team up with organizers at the Quebec Public Interest Research Group of McGill University, who are hosting an art show event on February 14th, 2015 in Montreal. And we asked if we could set up a table in the corner of their event, which was being hosted at the Café L'Artère, which is in the north end of Montreal in the Parc X neighborhood. We asked if we could just have a small table at the back of the room and where we could display your art and set up a recording setup and encourage participants of the event, people who are just attending the show, to come by, come look at your art, and just share some of their thoughts with you over the airwaves. So what you're about to hear, Pete, is just a few voices from Montreal. Some people have never seen your work before, and this is their first time. Others have known about you for some time. And we just want you to know that we're all thinking about you and care about you a great deal. So here we go.
Hi, Peter Collins. It's hard to get to know you from your introduction, but I just want to thank you for your art. It's made me think about my government a bit more in a critical fashion. I just want to say your insights have not gone unnoticed. So, best of luck. Thank you.
I guess I'm just in awe of how brave he must be to make such confrontational art in prison and to be so critical and to express himself like this, and I'm really impressed. Or like, I feel like a lot of people who are in prison right now would probably love to see this, and maybe also even people, or definitely also people who are not in prison, who might feel like the prison system as it exists right now, that there's like justice in it, and to like see this art from a like person in prison's perspective, like I feel like it could be really powerful to see those criticisms from someone who is actually experiencing it right now. Yeah. So I hope that this art gets more exposure.
Hi, my name's Kira, and I looked through a bunch of Peter's work, and I guess the thing that hit me was the piece that I knew from before was the piece that was used for the Pelican Bay hunger strike, which is beautiful, but what I guess didn't know about Peter's work was like the emotional breadth of it. Like, there's pieces that are cartoonish and funny in how they talk about it, and pieces that are pretty intense and like pretty dark, and there are pieces that are really serene and beautiful, and pieces that are sort of like political cartoons, and pieces that are kind of satirical, and I guess seeing them was like, it was just like a pretty big range of the kinds of feelings that I had interacting with the pieces, and I didn't know that, and I also think that's a really important way to interact with the issues. I think it's really important that people like are able to have that range and like get it from so many different ways, and so I guess that's just what I want to say, was I really appreciate that breadth and how many different like places the art got to for me.
I was looking at your piece that basically shows the prison and a lineup of guards marching into it and a lineup of prisoners marching into it with the words below describing if they build it, they will come. I think a lot about education, and I think a lot about how education can eventually be a part of abolishing prisons, and a piece like that is, it says everything, and I think a lot about what kind of world we would live in if textbooks for children were full of pictures like that instead of the absolute rubbish that fills them to this day. And I think a lot about what a picture like that could do to a lot of different people if they had access to it, and if they could start their mornings with a picture like that instead of what a lot of people start their mornings to and end their nights with. So thank you for creating pictures like that. They do a lot of work, and they give a lot of hope, and hopefully they can help make different worlds better worlds.
So since I had an experience with the institutions, and then it happened like such in a moment where I couldn't have an analysis, since I'm out, I really have an interest in general in the institutions,
okay,
understanding how the institutionalization of like marginalized people like just reinforces so much itself. Like, it's just like, it works so well. Like, I just like, they're so fucking smart.
Yeah.
Like, that just thing about like everything they're doing is pushing people into prisons, but such in a clear way. Like, when I was inside, it's just so clear that every little thing, every little way, they're not supporting people in a good way. They're like having mental health problems or have financial problems that might have caused having those mental health problems in the first place. And I really feel like it really literally pushes everybody to the prison system.
And this picture is so poignant because the man is walking across the tightrope with this big heavy stick that says parole guidelines, and it's just really accurate of how, you know, we set up these systems and we know that people are going to fail. It's just a really beautiful piece, and it's a very good critique, and thank you for making this beautiful art. It's very important, and it really speaks to a true problem in our society.
Hello, Peter, or Pete. My name's Annie, and I'm talking about, I want to talk about the piece that you made that has the Canadian Indian residential schools and how it traces to Canadian Indian residential universities. I feel like it's a really amazing visualization and like connector between how we understand the genocide and the trauma that indigenous people of this land have had to endure, and the like aftermath of colonization. And I think that looking at visuals is really helpful for me, and I find that the way this visual or like image or piece or whatever is structured really helps to trace like the way that the trauma that the state forced on people through residential schools now leads to people being incarcerated, and also is affected by the treaties and broken promises by the government and the racism that the government uses against indigenous people. So I feel like that for me was like the first thing, is like being able to like see really visually how those are connected. So thank you for all your work, and I hope that you know it's appreciated.
My name's Degan. It's one about healthcare in the prison system. And there is a physician, and someone is sitting there going, the physician says, "The good news is you are in good health!" Exclamation mark. The bad news is I'm being paid to say this. I think because a lot of times we don't think about healthcare inside prisons enough. I think people think that healthcare is a right for everyone. However, there's lots of people within Canada that don't have the same kind of care. And I think it's really important to think about. And I really like this piece because I'm also an occupational therapy student. And we think a lot about health and health promotion. I think that people inside in prison are often forgotten.
Doctors in the healthcare system in prison are really just a farce. And I think that Pete Collins really captured it really well. Doctors don't really care about incarcerated individuals. They don't use the practices that are recommended. They don't take into account people's health, and are, as he said, paid to just rubber stamp things. And that's really why I chose this piece. I thought it was really to the point and really well done. Thanks, Pete.
Hi, Peter. My name's Andrea Miller Nesbitt, and I was one of the people who did some reference work for you with Radical Reference. So I just wanted to say hi. And I remember once you responded to one of the reference things we gave you with a beautiful letter, and you created a nice logo for us, which was amazing, and we were so grateful. And you're a very talented artist, and I wish you the best and think of you. Take care.
Hi, Peter. This is Noah, one of the current hosts of the Prison Radio Show on CKUT, and I just wanted to say thank you so much for all that you've contributed to Prison Radio Show over so many years, and all that you've contributed to so much prison work and prison organizing, and just everything you've done. And thank you so much. So much respect.
That concludes our Valentine's Day message of love and appreciation to you, Peter Collins, this February 14th, 2015. Whatever happens in the next few weeks, the Termite Collective is thinking about you, Montreal is thinking about you, and your art will forever touch the hearts and minds of those who see it. All the best.
The time is 11:54, and you are listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and CKUT.ca on the internet. That was a piece by the Termite Collective for Peter Collins. The Termite Collective is a group of creative and concerned people who want to expose the ever-increasing repressive nature of prison through writing, workshops, political parody, and criminal cabaret.
And in case you have not been paying attention to the news lately or don't have access to the news, thousands of prisoners in Texas rose up and rioted together last Friday. According to BuzzFeed.com, about 2,000 prisoners in the Willacy County Correctional Center participated in what started as a protest action on Friday morning when prisoners refused to work and eat breakfast. prisoners were protesting medical services at the prison, which are terrible. By Saturday morning, the prison was, to quote one official, uninhabitable.
And to find out what's coming up next on Prison Radio and or other prison and prisoner-related activities in the region, you can check out our blog at prisonradioshow.wordpress.com and click on the calendar section. If you would like us to post an event you are hosting, you can email us at prison@ckt.ca. You can also subscribe to our podcast. The next Prison Radio Show will air on Thursday, March 12th at 5 p.m. If you have any questions about anything that you have heard on today's show, or if you wish to be involved with the show, feel free to contact us at prison@ckt.ca. Formerly incarcerated people are encouraged to participate. Folks can also leave a message on our listener comment line at 514-448-4041, extension 2547. And if you are in prison, we encourage you to participate in the show in any way possible. The mailing address for us here at CQT is the Prison Radio Show, care of CQT, 3647 University Street, Montreal, Quebec, H3A2B3. Thank you for tuning in to the Prison Radio Show here on CQT 90.3 FM. My name is Candace.
My name is Noah.
And we've been your hosts for today. Please stay tuned here to CQT 90.3 FM.
Consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had. Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
You were a number. You weren't a man. You want to be a human. I wasn't Jim Crow, and hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
The law. The law. When they hang my husband, is that just...